Welcome to A Cult of Personality, Esoteric Podcast Extraordinaire. I'm your host, Greg Kaminsky, and you can find our website at occultofpersonality.net, featuring an extensive archive of recorded interviews. This is episode number 158, featuring an interview with Apollonius Mithras to discuss the recent republication of the book Wicca, The Ancient Way. The Cult of Personality podcast is made possible by you, the listeners, and by the subscribers to the Occult of Personality membership section. This episode is also made possible by additional donations from Steve in the UK via the donate button at occultofpersonality.net, and Max from Calgary, who donates every month via the Occult of Personality Patreon campaign, available at patreon.com/occultofpersonality. I want to take a moment to remind you that although you're able to listen to this podcast at no charge, the costs for me to bring it to you are significant. From the technical architecture behind the podcast and website, including security, to the equipment and the software required, to the massive investment in time and energy that I put into this project, which is extensive. But I do it because I love bringing you these interviews. And I know from the emails and comments that I've received that you enjoy the quality, attention to detail, and appreciation for the Western esoteric tradition that's part of everything that I do here. So if you're able to spare some of your hard-earned currency to support A Cult of Personality by joining the membership section or donating via the donate button on the occultofpersonality.net website or via Patreon at patreon.com/occultofpersonality, I can definitely use your help right now. If you find these interviews interesting, informative, inspiring, and thought-provoking, please help me continue bringing you this free podcast. And if you're already supporting the show and have done so in the past, my heartfelt thanks, and I salute you all. A Cult of Personality podcast is also sponsored by Miskatonic Books, an online store that focuses on the esoteric, occult, ceremonial magic, Freemasonry, Rosicrucianism, witchcraft, the Golden Dawn, as well as dark fantasy, classic horror, and supernatural fiction. They carry books by all your favorite esoteric publishers as well. Just visit miskatonicbooks.com. The Hermetic Arts Learning Center, located in historic Salem, Massachusetts, offers unique instruction in the arcane arts from some of the most experienced and talented teachers around. The Hermetic Arts Learning Center is committed to the authentic Western esoteric tradition by providing students with quality, in-depth classes along with all the books and ritual tools one could ever want, many of them handcrafted. The ancient mysteries have a new home in the Witch City. Stop by the shop or visit online at hermeticarts.com. Now, in episode number 158, an interview about the book Wicca, The Ancient Way, which I'll be speaking with Apollonius Mithras, who is part of the Isis-Urania traditional witchcraft lineage, the same as the book's authors. Wicca, The Ancient Way is a small book of non-fictional and inspirational pieces of value for students and practitioners of all types of Wicca and witchcraft. It presents the existence of an ancient tradition of witchcraft of European origin, now practiced by some English-speaking witches. Not a spellbook, nor a book of rituals. It contains 9 pieces of thought-provoking and defining works of traditional Wicca. I find this book very interesting because it portrays Wicca as a mystery religion and describes the philosophy behind it, which can sometimes be obscured by more practical and aesthetic aspects of witchcraft. I also appreciate that this work comes through a lineage of traditional witchcraft that can be reliably traced back in time and place. I want to welcome you, Apollonius. Thank you very much for joining us this evening on A Cult of Personality podcast to discuss the book entitled Wicca, the Ancient Way. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us.
Well, it's my pleasure, Greg, and I'm looking forward to doing my best to answer your questions.
Would you please tell us about the history of the book, Wicca, the Ancient Way, and your involvement with its publication and republication now?
Sure. In the late 70s, early 80s, it was pretty clear to us as traditional witches, and in those days I was very new to that, but especially to my teachers, that there was a lot of selfishness and neurosis being promulgated as Wicca. And it became important to my teachers to give an account of the actual philosophy of Wicca, traditional Wicca, as a mystery religion. In other words, where can it take you? What are the moral qualities? What happens to the person? And kind of what's the nature of the religion, the structure of the religion, and so on. So Wicca the Ancient Way, in its first edition, was published privately in 1982. And then it was published by Illuminate Press in 91. And now it's being published again by the Hermetic Arts Learning Center in 2014. Excuse me, that 91 date may be incorrect. Let me just double check. Just take a second here. Yeah, 94. My own involvement was at the time the original publication took place. I was the high priest of the Isis Artemis Coven, and the people in our tradition, all of whom were much more experienced than I was, who were writing the book, discussed elements of it with me, asked for my opinion. I participated to that extent. It's not my work, but I participated to that extent. And then, feeling as I do now, being somewhat more experienced, that in fact the philosophy, the spirituality, the values of traditional Wicca are pretty much lost in all the brouhaha. I was discussing with the owner of Hermetic Arts Learning Center the fact that it really does need to be published again. And the owner of the Hermetic Arts Learning Center and his company is the Hermetic Arts Learning Center Publishing decided that he would republish the book more as an act of community service than for any real profit. The Janice Mithras, who was the most senior person in our tradition in 1980s, he died only a few years ago, was always insistent that the book be priced very cheaply, that nobody who wanted it should not have it because they couldn't afford it. So the original one was published for under $2, and the present one is published for just under $15.
That's very reasonable. You mentioned the sort of impetus behind the book, but could you talk a little bit more about why you believe it's important that it be available now, whereas it had been out of print for a few years?
Well, I believed it should be available for quite some time. I just didn't see a way of publishing it.
Okay.
And now with Amazon and so on, it's quite doable. And the Hermetic Arts Learning Center was willing to do the work of reformatting it and submitting it to a publisher and all of that, which was a considerable amount of work, which I'm very grateful for. But even today, when you say Wicca, you get a lot of different ideas. And some of them range from it's okay to curse your neighbor to, well, we kind of put flowers in our hair and we celebrate the seasons. And that's okay. I mean, the second one's okay. The first one, cursing your neighbor, is not. But all of that, you know, that kind of is public Wicca today, doesn't reflect the potential of a real mystery tradition comparable to the mystery traditions in Hinduism, Buddhism, Taoism, in terms of their goals and in terms of their techniques and their explication. And this has been pretty much lost. So in a short book, it's only about 50 pages, we really wanted to bring forward the process. What's important? What makes witchcraft a tradition worth following? And I'll expound on that on something that happened to me a few years ago. I was part of a computer discussion group, and I mean, different people call themselves Wiccans, and that's fine with me. That this particular person posted that in witchcraft or in Wicca, there are no true teachers. Everyone follows their own inclinations. And various people posted in agreeing. Some people said, well, we have to have some kind of guidelines. We don't know everything. And that went back and forth for a while. So I posted an answer that said, basically, it's hard to understand this discussion. Either what people are practicing leads to heightened states of mind, i.e. perfect love and perfect trust as an example, or it doesn't. If it does lead to heightened states of mind reliably, then there are people who've achieved it, and these people are teachers. And if it doesn't, maybe people should give it up and practice something that works. So in this case, I'm just trying to point out that there's a wide variety of stuff that's out there. And we don't want the central message, the mystery religion message of witchcraft, to be lost in all that noise. We want people to know that something else is possible.
Have you found that that's a controversial position?
Oh, sure.
I mean, being that it's like kind of confrontational on its face a little bit.
It is a little confrontational, but maybe I should restate things a bit. People can do all kinds of things, and that's fine with me. Okay, I'm not. I think that when any spiritual practice involves no belief that anything other than your own ego is your guide, then you're going to run into trouble because your ego, I imagine, I know mine for sure, has all kinds of problems attached to it, and I don't want to turn those problems into a religion. You know, the world has too many of those. Now, yeah. I'm not criticizing anyone. There's some people who by themselves are doing what they're doing, and they're doing very good work, you know. But from the point of view of traditional witches, this is not what the point of it is, and we want to be really clear about that. We also, rather than saying we want to be clear about what the point isn't, we also want to be clear about what the point is. This kind of situation is what led to the publication of the book. But the book is not there to confront or to criticize anyone. It's inspirational, and it's a heart statement as well as an explanation. Whether people choose to believe it or try to follow it, that's up to them.
Yeah, I mean, I found it, if nothing else, it provided an alternative perspective on the purpose and the entire nature of witchcraft as a tradition. But I think you've kind of talked about that, and probably will talk a little bit more about it as we go on. So maybe we should go back in time a little bit more. Could you talk about the origin of witchcraft a little bit, and where does it come from, and how did it get to us today?
Okay, now this is going to be really controversial. Okay, there are a lot of people who think that Gerald Gardner reinvented a tradition or inherited a few bits and pieces and made a tradition with Dorian Valiente in the 1950s, and that's the origin of Wicca. That's what you'll find commonly. And if you say anything else about being a tradition, people will tend to think you're not very well informed. Actually, there are plenty of indications. If you look at the history of deity worship, I mean, in spite of some claims that have been made, there has been a threefold goddess right back to before the classical period. There's been a horned god. There have been the elements of witchcraft can be identified, including the use of circles and so on, back to Sumeria. Our position is, yes, Wicca has changed through time, but it's a continuous lineage. And we don't really, you know, that's our position. We would ask people, okay, that's what we believe, and please respect it. But that's really not the point. The point is, what's the spiritual message of the book? If you like the spiritual message of the book, then a good part of it has been accomplished. We're not here to kind of take the position of saying, oh, we have access to this and access to that. That's not what the book's for.
What I wonder, you know, as an outsider, you know, I'm very sensitive to these ideas, you know, especially because it's not my tradition. As the expert on the subject, do you think that people are wanting to conflate historiography with, I don't want to use mythology in a negative sense, but more in a positive sense, where you know, like you talked about a continuous lineage, and I'm not saying that that's not historically accurate, but what I'm saying is that's, you said, your belief. So what I'm getting at is, when someone puts forward their belief system, the way they see the universe, that's not up for debate necessarily, because that's their belief system. And I think in this argument about where does witchcraft originate, I think people tend to lose or confuse one with the other, with the historical reality versus the beliefs or the mythology, as I might call it, of a continuous lineage. But maybe I'm confused, and I'm just wondering if you could comment on that idea.
Look, if you want to look back, and you can look at some of the historical research done by Raven Grimassi, for one person. You can look at some of the etymological research done by Robert Matheson, who is a professor emeritus of languages at Northwestern. It is certainly arguable that it's at least longstanding as a religion.
Yeah. Oh no, I agree. And I don't mean to interrupt you, but I would agree that it is longstanding, and I would agree that there is historical evidence that supports that point of view. The only thing that I think is the heart of the controversy is whether that tradition actually made the leap from pre-Christian to, you know, the Christian times or modern times.
To now, yeah. Well, there's no hard and fast evidence one way or the other. There are indications, and depending on your predilections, you can read them one way or the other. This is my experience as a practitioner. And the depth and the profundity of the system itself argues for that. And there are plenty of examples of systems that have not become public until the modern era. There are a number of complete religions or systems of Tibetan Buddhism, which high lamas even denied they existed up until the 1970s. There are such examples. Can I prove it? No, and I'm not trying to. Can I, just as it cannot be proved that it didn't exist. This is the position which really works. And when you look at the various elements of it from the inside, it's hard to conclude that there isn't a continuous tradition. It's certainly changed over time. The new foreword to Wicca the Ancient Way actually really discusses this in some depth. But this is our situation. We're certainly not going to resolve the controversy tonight.
No, certainly not. And I don't really know that there is I mean, the controversy is only in people's minds, but
exactly.
What I think is valuable, though, is to at least discuss it and to mm-hmm. hear points of view, especially from someone like you, who is very well experienced, has that lineage, and I think you have a better understanding of what might be something that you've been taught that came from recent times versus things that, you know, seem like they have descended from much more ancient times. And
yeah.
I think, you know, with some discernment and being a student of these subjects for so many years, that you, one would think, you know, you come to be able to figure out, you know, exactly what you're working with in that respect. So I appreciate your clarifying that.
Thank you. I will add that I'm aware of two other traditional lineages in North America that use very similar terminology to us, very, very similar teachings, very, very similar ideas. And we've done some pretty extensive research. There does not appear to be any historical connection.
Hmm.
Certainly not back as far as we can go, which in one case is into the mid-1800s.
Interesting.
So there it is. In a way, I mean, we could talk about this all night and not come to something that would be conclusive to people listening. But as a practitioner, yes, I think it's ancient. I also think that just like many religions, like natives say that many native tribes, mystery religions say that the star people brought the teachings. And I'm not talking about UFO paranoia or anything like that, but that higher intelligence, let's say, brought the teachings. The same thing is you also find in some branches of traditional voodoo. You find it in Oriental religions, and we have it too. Our belief is that what we have inherited is actually a very fragmented system of stellar lore. That we take the opposite view from most people. We don't think Wicca evolved over time. We think that a very pure system has been damaged by history, and we have the remains of it.
Well, that would be more in line with, I think, historical observation of religious faith traditions. You know, the realized being receives the revelation, and it then is disseminated as a faith tradition, and then fairly quickly over time, it completely dissolves into a personality cult, and then usually worse than that.
Well, I think you're right about that, and I would actually kind of like to move on more towards the content, but the only thing I'll say about that is, if a religion didn't come from a state of, let's say, to use the Eastern term, enlightenment or realization, why would I be studying it for all this time?
Well, that kind of goes to the heart of the book, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So to move on, and this might be this is an interesting point that the book brings up with regard to the relationship between witchcraft and another esoteric tradition, that of Kabbalah. Could you describe the historical relationship between Kabbalists may have been teaching people that were not Jewish, or maybe even interest in Judaism as a exoteric faith tradition? And I'm wondering,
sure.
You know, sure. how was this transmitted into witchcraft?
Well, it's woven back and forth quite a few times in history. In fact, the interactions are a bit like, you know, it looks like it's been designed by, if you graft it, it would look like it had been designed by a kitten on a ball of wool, you know. But let's start with the Sefer Yetzirah, which is the Jewish Kabbalist text and the foundation of Jewish Kabbalistic study, which says that Abraham, a Sumerian, I might add, there were no such thing as Jewish people in the day of Abraham. He was really the founder, had foreign wives, and he taught them the Kabbalah using quote-unquote unclean names. In other words, the names of other deities than Jehovah. And that by doing so, he blessed those people and their descendants. So this idea that it's has many versions or types goes right back to its origins. Witches have been told, and I've never seen any evidence for this, but witches have been told that certainly during the various persecutions in Europe, perforce, Kabbalists and Jews had to kind of survive, and suddenly your prejudices drop away when you're both in serious danger and of horrible treatment, and discovered that there were many things in common, including there are 10 very important goddess names in witchcraft. There are 10 spheres to the Tree of Life. There are 4 planes in each system, and that comes to 40 spheres, which is the equivalent of the witch's ladder of 40 knots. There's quite a lot. And then even in historical times, the interaction between witches and members of the Golden Dawn, I think, probably went both ways. The Golden Dawn, of course, being the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, which was very, very Kabbalistically based and explicated Kabbalistic magic really well. So I think you can see that there's a pretty rich interaction, and that's the way we see it.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I feel like that entire area is really ripe for more exploration.
I'd like to see some objective historical research, which will either tell us something very interesting or it won't, but I would like to see it. The other thing about both studying witchcraft, and we do, our coven, Isis Hathor Coven, and the covens that I've trained in the Isis Irenia lineage, which is the lineage that put forth this book. The author, Janice Mithras, was the founder of that particular lineage of the tradition. If you understand witchcraft well, you have no trouble understanding the inner teachings of other mystery systems. Similarly, if you understand Kabbalah well, you have no trouble understanding the inner workings of other mystery traditions. And you might find that if you're exposed to the inner teachings of those traditions, they really explicate traditional witchcraft and Kabbalah vastly. There's very clearly many, many, in my mind, many cultural variations. Mystery systems can look extremely different on the surface, but once you get involved in them, you discover that, no, actually, we're really all kind of talking the same game here. There are different aspects, and I think that's a good thing, because people have different kinds of minds, and cultures have different personalities, and the same mystery tradition wouldn't work everywhere in the world. Very, very senior, and I don't want to embarrass anybody by using their names, but very, very senior Hindu and Buddhist secret tradition masters have said that Wicca is the Tantra of the West. And when I say Tantra, I want to be very clear to your listeners, this has nothing to do with sex. The whole preoccupation of sex and tantric practice is kind of a Western neurosis. Tantra is a system of interweaving all of the elements of experience into a realization of the actual unity of self and other. Witches do this by looking at the goddess, who represents activity, compassion. Very important. You cannot be a witch if you're not working on compassion all the time. And the god, who shows a kind of meditative, clear awareness, the experiencer of all that activity, are actually one. And that one thing is called the ancient harmony in traditional witchcraft. In Kabbalah, it's called Ayin, Ayin Sof, Ayin Sof Aor, the three veils of negative existence. Witches really try to embody the nature of the goddess and the god with the passwords perfect love and perfect trust. Ultimately, you can attribute each password to each deity, but in simple terms, perfect love is the goddess. She is the activity. Perfect trust is the horned god, who is unconditional awareness. And both qualities, unconditional compassion and unconditional awareness, are called perfect simply because they are unconditional. And in fact, they are the same. If you have unconditional love, it's because you really feel one with everything and everyone else. And if you have unconditional trust, it's because you really do feel at one with everything else. So the two are kind of two sides of the same coin, if you like. They're two flavors. And this is part of realizing this. And I make no claims for myself. No responsible initiative of mystery tradition will make any claims for themselves, and I certainly don't. But I have seen witches really develop this to a very, very deep degree.
the goddess, the horned god, the ancient harmony, these correspond to the three degrees of witchcraft. Is that correct?
That's exactly correct. As outlined in the book, the first degree, and unlike some traditions, we don't initiate people right away. And most, there are traditions that do, that's fine. That's what they do. Most traditions that I'm aware of don't. People have to study for at least a year to really get the groundwork to benefit from initiation and also to see if this is for them. And if this is really a not only one life, but lifetimes changing commitment that they want to make. Also, the teachers have to see if this person really does have the capacity for self-knowledge, compassion, humility, many things. Study, dedication. They could have all those qualities and not have the study and dedication. But assuming people complete the first year of training, then they're probably eligible to be initiated into the first degree, which is sacred to the goddess. It's sacred to the elements, the five philosophical elements, and it's sacred to the a lower triad on the Kabbalistic tree of life. It's really has to do with self-discipline, knowing yourself better, which is really what balancing the elements is all about. Yes, there are quote-unquote objective elements, but you work with the elements in such a way that you become aware of your own personal predilections, things you could be doing better, things that will probably be lifelong challenges in some cases, but you need to have a grip on them. And you learn generosity, and you learn self-discipline. You also do a lot of magical work with the elements. That's of the three rays of the goddess, power, love, and wisdom, the first degree is more devoted towards power, although because you're working, you're disciplining yourself, you're dealing with the environment, although certainly they're very strong elements of love and wisdom. The second degree, sacred to the horned god, has to do with realizing that, in fact, at the basis of all this and all these phenomena and this marketplace of lives and people and plants and internal emotions and everything that's going on, there's this one constant identity. You could say, I am. The horned god, or if you're a woman practitioner, it could be it's the goddess, but divinity is actually what our nature is experiencing all this. And the person to be eligible for the second degree is not simply a matter of a year's study in the first degree, which a year is too short for most people. It also has to do that they can actually make this realization and make it without narcissism and egotism and all of that. I mean, we all have needs to be recognized and feel important and so on, and those have to be put aside. That's the second degree. The third degree actually is the union of the two. It's pure, unconditional awareness, and it's manifest as perfect love and perfect trust. I can't say too much about the third degree. It's very difficult to talk about in concrete terms because you can only approach it through experience, through practices, and through meditation. But I think I can give you some idea. It's possible to transcend rational thought, and yet rational thought can be your servant. It's possible to transcend the emotions, and yet the emotions can be a manifestation of the ancient harmony. So I don't want people to get too kind of fixated on one idea as, oh, this is nothing, or oh, it's pure light. It really has to be experienced. And I hope I've given it a taste of the third degree. Does that sound very complex? Oh, yes. Kabbalistically, the equivalent of the second degree is the spheres, if we have Kabbalists listening, of Chesed, Geburah, Tifareth. And it also impinges on Hod, Netzach, and Yesod, even though those also fall into the first degree. The third degree corresponds to Kabbalistic spheres of Kether, Chochmah, and Bina. That may not mean much to some of your listeners, but I think some of your listeners will be interested. This is why, by the way, often people, you read books where people can't really tell you what the third degree is for. It's traditionally called, it's not a working degree. It's a degree of realization.
When we talk about a road or a path to realization or enlightenment or illumination or however you want to call it, what is the reason that one would want to embark on that journey, or maybe what is a reason or reasons one should embark on that journey would be a better question.
Well, I think, you know, I'm going to break it down into two parts. Why should you, and why do people do it? People do it basically because they're dissatisfied and uncomfortable, and the world doesn't seem right to them. Now, there are a lot of people the world doesn't seem right to, and some go into politics, and some go do all kinds of things. Some rob banks, you know. But the world doesn't seem right because people, beings in general, not just people, are suffering. And that might include oneself. This is the legend of the goddess who, being immortal and eternal, delights in life, but all of her, everything she sees around her dies and suffers. And you could look at that as the external world, and you could also look at that as in terms of your own experiences of loss and inevitable suffering that life brings. So, but it has to be focused a lot on the suffering of so-called others. So then she can't stand this anymore, and she hears that somewhere in the center of hell there's a being called the God of Death who really knows the answer to why is this going on. So with unbelievable courage, the only kind, you know, the courage that only really perfect love can give, she descends through the seven gates of the underworld, and at each gate she gives up, and some traditions say a veil, some say a jewel, some say an ornament. Each emphasizes kind of a different aspect. And remember, the seven planets in Western astrology really kind of make up the totality of the personality. So she surrenders everything, and then she confronts the God of Death. And I don't want to go too much into what happens, but essentially, she asks him why things are why everything suffers, and due to their interaction, she realizes that everything is her, and everything's fine. But this is very comforting to her, but it's not comforting to all the beings that are dying and suffering and think that they're in this terrible situation. So she immediately leaves the underworld and starts bringing all of her children, even if necessary, one at a time, to meet the Horned God and have the same experience. This is the only motivation that will last in witchcraft. People come with all kinds of other motivations, it's normal, but they have to have the capacity to see that this is the important motivation. It's the only one that will last. You know, we're told early in our training, keep pure your highest ideals, strive ever towards it. Because your ideals and your sense of compassion and wisdom and your own capacity for responsible action have to constantly expand. If you're invoking the lords of the universe, then you have to expect to have a stronger, a wider, a higher nature, and that nature means including everything. You know, other motivations that might be there, I really need to fall away, because if the motivations are strictly power or insecurity or working out family issues, all those things are things that everybody suffers from, and there are different ways of dealing with them, including from within the tradition. But those things will eventually become gods in themselves. And then people's practices and their beliefs really go off the path badly. Mm-hmm. So the most important touchstone in the tradition is, are your aspirations okay? If they are, you can go through a lot, and you're going to be fine.
So this would explain why many people probably kind of either drop off or veer into so many other areas along the way.
Well, sure. Absolutely. That is, that's exactly why. But if we build a religion based on our blind spots, our unfulfilled personal needs, that's what we're going to worship. And the results magically will not be very good. Because what you invoke is what you become. So now, not everyone's doing this. Some people have kind of more limited ideals, but they have good character and good ethics, and they're doing something, you know, that I personally can respect. But to really do the path, do the tradition, then this involves refining yourself, giving up a jewel or an ornament or a veil repeatedly, actually way more than seven times. That is the process.
Many people who are involved with esotericism are involved in more than one tradition. And I'm just curious about your opinion about being involved with more than a single tradition, and are there times that it might be more appropriate than others?
Yeah, I think that I was certainly, I know a number of witches who are involved in other mystery traditions, but the appropriate time is when you've gotten a really good handle on the tradition you're studying. The only exception I can think to that is, I mean, some people are at heart a Sufi and not a witch, or they're at heart a Buddhist and not a witch, or they're at heart something else and not a witch. And then maybe they should go and study that, you know, because that's what's right for them. But generally, you need to have a very good, solid foundation. And at that point, rather than being a distraction, the two traditions almost become elaborations of each other. So that can be very helpful. I know from some of my own studies that there are elements of witchcraft that I only really got to understand better by studying another mystery system, and vice versa. So, yeah, I don't think it's a bad thing, but it's a bad thing when people flit around and when they kind of try to collect merit badges. I think you really need to be humble about this, and you really need, if you're going to study another system, then put the same heart and devotion into it that hopefully you put into witchcraft, because otherwise, without heart and devotion, none of this bears fruit, not in any kind of positive way.
Well, that kind of leads to a different question. You know, looking at witchcraft as a mystery tradition, and not to pick on witchcraft specifically, because you could probably lump every Western mystery tradition into the same bucket. And there's very many valid reasons why this is so. The Eastern traditions generally have at least some individuals you can point to throughout history and say, well, this person was a saint, or this person was a sage.
This person did it. Yeah.
This person realized. And I'm not sure that that doesn't happen in Western esoteric traditions, but we can't ever seem to really point to someone like that and say, well, this person did it and that person did it. I mean, maybe there are in within like the church or in Judaism or within Islam, perhaps you could find some, but within witchcraft or within Masonry or Martinism or these other traditions, it seems like we're playing catch up.
Well, to some extent we are. However, there are definitely people who've done it. I've met a couple, and they're a constant inspiration to me, but the whole nature of this system is to stay hidden. There, you know, and the West and the Middle East has had a long history of giving people a hard time who say, you and I are both God. For instance, Mansur, the Sufi saint, said, there is nothing under this turban that is not God, and he was stoned to death for that. So there are, you know, there is a history of keeping quiet. But beyond that, there are some systems that work in the background, and there's some systems that work in the foreground. And it's the nature, certainly, of traditional witchcraft, even before the persecutions, that that it worked in the background. One of the real problems with Western mysticism today, of course, is that you don't see, you know, you can't identify these people unless you've actually met them or you've seen you know, documents and you believe that they're true. Is now a lot of Westerners are saying, well, you know, no, there aren't any people like that. What we have is what we have is people who just kind of become better people, but that's the limits of their possible development, and that's really unfortunate. For sure, there are people in the East who are very well regarded. There are also people in traditional witchcraft who I would put on the same level. It happens less often because we're less well organized, we are less cohesive, or we've been shattered by a lot of persecution. So yes, it does happen less often. I think that the Hermetic magic system has the same potential, but it rarely happens, again, to my knowledge, and I might be wrong about this. The real danger in the Western mysteries is egotism. People get flooded by an influx of divine energy and realization, and then they start thinking, I'm God, but there's a little unspoken caveat. but other people aren't. And it's unspoken. I mean, people may deny it, but that's how it is, and that's how they act. So, yeah, it is a problem. Eastern traditions are very, very well elaborated in a way that we can't match.
Well,
and that is unfortunate. It's one of the reasons I've studied some Eastern traditions.
Well, same with me. I mean, I think the same with almost everyone I talk to. But one of the things I also notice is, and I believe me, the persecution in the West and the idea that these traditions are esoteric and they're not out front, I very much take that to heart, and I understand how significant those things are historically. But I think there's another aspect which is really central to the book here, and I think the entire purpose behind it and its central theme and what we've been talking about, this idea of a mystery tradition, the idea of a realization or enlightenment or a path that leads to a experience and transformation of that philosophically and fundamentally for people. One of the things I keep coming back to is prior to this book, I had never seen anything that's introduced people interested in witchcraft to the idea that they were on a path of self-realization. When you enter into most Western traditions, no one is telling you up front that you and I united are God and that there's no difference. You know, and these ideas really don't start to come to the forefront until much later on. Whereas in the East, that's right on the doorstep. It's like, here's what we've got for you if you want to come in.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? That's a problem. Now, I'm aware of another tradition where no historical link with ours, which describes this exact process in the exact same way and in some ways the same terms that we do in Isis Urania. If you meet traditional witches and traditional witches realize that you're somebody who, one way or the other, through one system or another, have realized certain things, then they will be very upfront about it. In traditional witchcraft, and this is not only in our tradition, enlightenment is called remembrance. Because it's not a matter of gaining something. It's a matter of cutting through all this, getting rid of all these veils or jewels and ornaments, and remembering who we are. The Eastern traditions actually do have some great advantages. And I'm the last person to deny it. But if your heart is in witchcraft, and it's a very direct system that can work extremely well, then that's what you study. Every other traditional witch I know from another lineage does study one or another Oriental mystery system. Now, it doesn't mean you can't study witchcraft by itself. I have students who do very well studying witchcraft and Kabbalah by themselves. But what you point out is partly history. It's also partly the kind of Western mind. The Western mystery traditions as a whole introduce symbols to people, and they let them lie in the person's unconscious until they flower with some guidance and some development. The Eastern systems usually have huge extended commentaries. The danger of the Eastern systems is that they can become very intellectualized. The danger of the Western system is you can completely lose track of why you're doing what you're doing. So unfortunately, no, we are more damaged, much more damaged than in the East. And I absolutely concede that.
Yeah. And I'm not advocating that the Western tradition shouldn't be followed or enhanced or built up to that same level. In fact, I would advocate that they should be, and that the example of the Eastern traditions, we should try to emulate their depth and success more than anything else.
Absolutely. And that's one of the major reasons, if not the major reason, that Wicca the Ancient Way was published. It really, I hope, very coherently outlines the process. I think that, for example, it doesn't only apply to traditional witches. I think Hermetic magicians might find some very interesting material that applies to their path.
Certainly.
Very, very, very relevant.
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah. And I've had some very interesting discussions with them, and one of my students has had more discussions with them. And one particular Native American medicine woman. And all these things are, they all enhance each other at some point. What we need to avoid is this kind of new age, I do a little of this, I do a little of that, everything's light, you know. This is really serious work. And all the mystery traditions, as I'm sure, Greg, you're very well aware, will tell you that this is a very disciplined dance.
Yeah, I mean, if it's not, you end up getting destroyed, basically.
No kidding. No kidding.
Who are the Mighty Ones?
Okay, the Mighty Ones is a generic term. It's a general term, and it covers a wide range of beings. And we can start with this very simple physical consciousness of small particles. And they maintain, they create and maintain the existence that we know on all planes. We can then move to the elementals, the spirits of the elements. We can move to kind of the elemental lords and kings who are very similar to the archangels in the Kabbalistic system and some of the higher elemental angels. The Mighty Ones also include the Mighty Dead. All of the realized witches who've gone before us, who've made the oath of eternal return, and will come to witchcraft ceremonies and so on, if properly called, and attend. There are the Watchers, the Star People, the beings who not only originated the system, but are constantly, without interfering with free will, trying to guide humanity through all the various challenges that we're facing. And of course, we're facing quite a lot now. That's the nature of the experience we're having. And lastly, the Mighty Ones are the goddess and the god themselves with their infinite power, love, and wisdom. So the Mighty Ones covers a lot of ground.
Now, these questions that I'm going to ask you are generated based on what's written in the book. So they're not totally out of left field for people who have not read the book yet. What is your understanding of the nature of the universe with regard to the plurality of deities and what people refer to as the unity of divinity?
Yeah, there is no contradiction. There's kind of they're very fundamental polarity experiences that every being in a body and most beings that are astral beings and so on have. And that's the experience of myself and other. If you've lost, if you transcended that, then you don't need a mystery religion. You're doing fine.
That's probably a good statement. I would agree with
so
that.
So the goddess and the god for us represents all of those many, many ways that duality plays out in the world, including all of the opposites we see, all of the possible manifestations in different ways. Like Kabbalah, it's an emanationist system. It starts with a very simple, even the word unity is misleading, but I'm going to say unity. And then it manifests out increasingly complexly as it expresses and explores itself. And that's the entire universe descending through the gates, the seven gates, to find out its own nature. So in witchcraft, we say all goddesses are one goddess and all are one. All goddesses are one goddess, and all gods are one god, and both are one. And we really see it that way. There's no real contradiction. And, for example, if you go to a Hindu and say, well, you don't believe in monotheism, they will think that you're really not well informed about Hinduism, although Hinduism has countless deities.
Yeah, well, this brings up an interesting question because, and I think many people who self-identify as monists or monotheists kind of look at it this way, and that is, well, if you have the ultimate, you know, sitting at the top of this hierarchy, why waste time with anything below it.
Well, you shouldn't waste time with it.
And I'm you know, I don't agree with that position, but I think,
understand.
You know, just as a devil's advocate kind of question.
It's a reasonable question. You shouldn't waste time with it. But the fact is that each of us are very multifaceted. And it is as natural for you and me to create thoughts and emotions and personas and even separate lives over lifetimes as it is for the earth to grow grass and trees. It's not going to stop. So from the highest point of view, we have to know the nature of this, that it's all the play or the expression of the ancient harmony. But we also need to understand our own natures very well in order that we can deal with ourselves and we can deal with others. There are moments when your heart is very moved by one particular aspect of what we would say is the goddess, or you could say the ultimate nature. For instance, if you look at the full moon in a night sky in the country, and that has one flavor, and it inspires something in many people, even if they don't exactly know what it is, it's there. And then if you look at a parent, whether it's an animal or a human, patiently looking after its child, it inspires something else. There are many, many flavors to this, and we need to, rather than reject them, because what we don't deal with will come up, and if you'll pardon my language, bite us in the ass at some point. We need to really have a very wide view of the play or the nature of the ancient harmony. So there are many, many kinds of spirits and beings. There are all goddesses and all gods. But traditional witches, again, unlike what you might have read, do not simply, I'm going to choose this pantheon or that pantheon. They may work with different pantheons for very specific reasons, whether for themselves or for the sake of humanity or for any other particular reason. But they always base it on the worship of the goddess and the god, which in the names we have are Aradia and Kernunas. There are other names, but Aradia and Kernunas are the names that we have.
Is there any value, do you think, in seeing like the goddess and the god or other deities as intermediaries who can interface between us and the absolute, if you will?
Well, look, we have times, if you've been studying and meditating, there are times when it's very, in a very genuine way, accessible to you to say everything's one thing and it has no, everything's okay, everything has no particular nature, and rest in that state. It takes a lot of meditation, it takes a lot of practice. Unless somebody has extraordinarily good karma, it takes work. There are other times when we really feel that we're interacting with something. We don't know how we're going to pay our rent. There are many things that can, you could think of a million things. A loved one died. Or we see something that makes us very happy. We fall in love. And at those moments, it might be helpful for us to approach the deities as intermediaries. Because we are kind of caught up in a system in believing in different levels of reality and different kinds of reality. But what's very important is even when we do this, we don't really lose track of the nature of things. We don't really lose track of our the fact that we are the ancient harmony. The universe and the mind has a lot of different moods and modes. And so we're human beings, in many cases, struggling to develop a form of realization. And there are times when we really need to think about a cosmic parent. And there are other times when we need to think, you know, that's really not the way it is. The way it is ultimate nature. Hopefully over time, those two approaches kind of blend into each other. I can give hints or talk about it, but really to do it, you have to experience it and you have to work the system. What I'm hoping Wicca the Ancient Way, though, will give people who otherwise might not be exposed to it a sense of what's possible. It's also possible, and I'm not certainly not talking down to anyone, but it's possible there may be people who've inherited a tradition but haven't inherited all the explanations.
Certainly, yeah.
And that would be extremely valuable.
This is a question that comes up a lot for people who are not necessarily into witchcraft themselves, but may be interested in it or attracted by the aesthetic of it, because it seems, you know, the emphasis on the horned god, is there or not any connection with any kind of Satanism or any kind of like left-hand path or Luciferian or whatever term people like to throw around that uses these same kind of aesthetic symbols?
Right. Absolutely not. The kinds of things that you're talking about do not emphasize self-knowledge and compassion. They do not emphasize transcendence. There's no connection between them. I mean, many, many writers on witchcraft have talked about how the ancient horned gods became conflated with the devil. And that is absolutely true. But at this point, I think anybody reasonably educated in Western esotericism knows that there's no connection. Witches don't even believe in the devil. We don't believe in the duality of you know, an evil god and a good god fighting it out. Evil certainly exists, but evil is created by ignorance, lack of compassion, lack of wisdom, egotism, and it can get to the stage where you have actual evil beings haunting people and so on, but evil as an absolute principle does not exist for us. What exists is a kind of ignorance, profound, profound ignorance that I don't even know how to say how profound it is, but there's no connection with those kinds of currents.
It's interesting. My research has told me the same thing that you've just said, but I continue to run into people often who are interested in esotericism and maybe initiated in something or other, but that they had prior experience with the Church of Satan, and that they still identify with that sort of what they see as a liberating philosophy, and don't, I think, realize that for people on the outside, the conflation of these things is not really ideal.
Well, it's damaging, but the question is liberation from what? We live in a society where, you know, short of committing some kind of outright crime, you can do whatever you want. We live in a society that will give you the opportunity to explore yourself, make fashion statements, lead a certain lifestyle. Whether or not these things are really a good idea is, you know, depends on the person and what they're doing. But liberate from what? In my opinion, it takes, no, and I'm not really addressing you. I'm addressing kind of thinking that it takes a very particular kind of mind to say, well, I have to have permission from the god of evil before I can go and do something selfish. I don't want you to do, I say you, I'm not talking about you, but I'm talking about people in general. I don't want people to do something selfish, but they don't need the permission of a god of evil. People are doing selfish things all the time. It's kind of like people who feel they have to dress up and make incense and light candles and do invocations in order to have sex. I mean, they might, you know, what in this world, in this society, there's no particular need to dress this up as some kind of religion or philosophy.
Well, I might agree with you, but I also understand that there are people who feel that their identity is not accepted, or that they are part of a marginalized group. And one way to sort of armor themselves against that is to identify with the other, which is exactly the whole satanic philosophy.
I agree.
So I'm not justifying or explaining it, but I mean,
I know my only question to somebody like that is, what good are you actually doing yourself? And they'll probably tell you they're doing themselves some good, but it's very interesting to listen to the answers. None of those things will actually produce any kind of lasting happiness.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you mentioned this several times already. It's not a path of real, true liberation. It's really just a path of further entrapment, kind of.
Well, absolutely. But, you know, these are discussions. It's like discussing different systems of ethics with somebody who has no ethical sense. Your conversation will go around in circles. And those discussions will do the same thing. But what I can say from the point of view of traditional witches is we don't have anything to do with that. That's up to other people what they do. And we certainly don't encourage it, but it's got nothing to do with witchcraft. And the conflation is unfortunate, and but I can't do anything about it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's kind of a good follow-up is, like, if you don't feel like you can do anything about it, is it just better to ignore it, or, you know, or just, like, speak out like you just did when I asked you the question, and just leave it there?
I think it really depends on the many things, including circumstances, but right now I feel the best thing to do is speak out. Mm-hmm. And but mostly the people who are receptive to that kind of statement are already not that vulnerable to doing those things. So, as witches, we spend a lot more time. We do pray for humanity. We do practices for increasing in the world compassion and responsibility, all of those things. We encourage people who are members of religions generally just to be better members of that religion if that's their path, you know. Whether or not it leads to liberation, it doesn't matter. That's where their heart is right now, and we encourage them to do it sincerely. But we don't spend a lot of time on worrying about what other people are doing. We spend the time working on the great work.
Well, I think that's a good place to probably wrap it up. And
okay.
Is there any final thoughts or closing comments you'd like to leave the listeners with?
I think one of the things that I personally find disturbing in terms of it, what it is and the consequences for people, is people practicing various forms of paganism and occultism without a genuine heart of devotion, a heart that transcends any personal needs. Without a genuine love and devotion. That love and devotion, even if you're making mistakes about what you're doing, it'll get you somewhere. And without it, what are you doing? And I've noticed there's a lot of intellectualization, a lot of reducing gods to archetypes, and so on and so on and so on, none of which serves widening consciousness. Carl Jung in Psyche and Symbols said it is a measure, I'm quoting from memory, but it's a measure of the nature of our times that in order to talk about gods, we have to talk about archetypes.
Yeah.
And that's, Jung said that. So I really hope if people take away anything from this, that they maybe open their hearts to wider possibilities and the potential of compassion, self-discipline, meditation. That's it.
Thank you. Can you please just remind people of the title of the book and where they might be able to find it?
Okay, well, you can get it on Amazon. It's called Wicca, the Ancient Way. I recommend the 2014 edition because it has a new foreword, and it's been edited a little bit more completely. But they can get it on Amazon, Wicca, the Ancient Way.
Great. Thank you so much, Apollonius. I really appreciate you taking so much time with us this evening.
Well, it's my pleasure.
In the Occult of Personality membership section, David Newman, the man behind the Hermetic Arts Learning Center, will join us to discuss his work, including the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, Ceremonial Magic, the Goetia, the Tarot, and his own personal grimoire, which is soon to be forthcoming. Don't miss that fascinating conversation. Just go to occulttopersonality.net/membership and join now if you haven't already. It's the best way to support the podcast while receiving access to a tremendous amount of additional exclusive content. Thanks for listening, and until next time.